Welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined as always.
By the way, guys, I'm just going to stop you right now.
What's that now?
We've been doing this for a year. I just want to play the first, just a little throwback, our first ever podcast. This is 63. Let's listen to number one.
All right.
Uh-oh. Crummy audio.
You're going to make us listen to the whole
just for a second. Just for a second. Sometimes you got a review.
Yeah, this sound is terrible.
Live stream!
We weren't live streaming, though.
I had to do my own air horn.
All right. Something's
coming up here I want us to hear.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the very first episode of the Interracial John Podcast. So you just heard our unofficial theme song, which is Pirates Anthem by Coco T, Home T, and Shaba Ranks. And we just love that song. And, you know, we just love it.
Poignant.
Yes.
Wait for it.
The best.
Comes.
Love that song.
It's coming.
Okay, anyways. So we are coming to you from the suburbs of Philadelphia. And since this is our first podcast, I thought the best thing would be to kind of talk about why we named the podcast Interracial John. So,
use guys.
So the interracial part is pretty easy to explain, but I am one of your hosts. At
Oh wait, what was that?
Mostly black woman.
I'm just gonna say one of your hosts for avid listeners. I know there's a handful of you out there. You'll know that that's been a long-standing bone of contention.
You know that
with who is the host, and I've acquiesced. I am not.
You need to acquiesce.
I am the not so talent. You are the host. I'm joining you all the time. But there was a bit of a. For a while there, who's the host? I'm a host, one of the hosts. And I just want to point out, the very first episode, you did say one of
Was the very first episode, when I thought we were going to be sharing the duties of this podcast 50-50.
Stop trolling shit. You went into radio.
You brought it. You started.
Episode one and a half, you're like, I'm the host. I'm like, oh, really?
Bring shit to the table if you're not ready to have the tea spilled here on the air.
All right, well, tell everyone they can find us.
You can find us if you're just now joining us for the first time on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's JAWN, or on our website, interracialjohn.com. Of course, we're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr. At Interracial John, again, JAWN. We love feedback. So you can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher, and we will read it here on the air. You can also email us, interracialjohn@gmail.com, and you can leave us a voicemail at 657-JOHNERS. That's 657 JAWNERS. And if it's under 3 minutes, we'll play it here. And quick shout out to the Black Guy Who Tips, Rod and Karen.
Father.
For these particular rules we use for our feedback. Lots of other shows use it as well, but shout out to them. And we have some feedback we'll be reading, so that'll be fun to do. What's going on with you?
You know, I wanted to talk about it was the event we went to about a week ago.
Sure. I think it was a Racism GR, I think it's
called. Yeah, I think it was Racism GR. And it was billed as sort of like a discussion and a community forum.
Conversation, I think.
Yeah, and they set some ground rules about, you know, sharing and privacy. And I thought there were decent rules about being present and not being on your phone kind of stuff. And, you know, I thought, okay, great, let's, you know, get into it. And I planned on doing nothing but just sitting and listening. I really, you know, I've only lived here in GR for, 3 months? Didn't have much to
We're input. In observation mode.
Yeah, observation mode. There's not a whole lot I know about racism.
I've observed a whole fucking lot, but yeah, we're in observation.
Well, and I can't remember who tweeted it, but so there was, and first of all, it's depressing how few people tweet here in Grand Rapids. Get with it, GR. Twitter's a thing.
Fucking Twitter.
Come on.
It's the future.
Hashtag
GR. Actually, it's the past. Get it together.
So anyway, someone tweeted like, oh, you know, racism discussion in GR, like, you know, steeped in whiteness, you know, like all these white people up here talking, sucking all the air out of the room. And it definitely was a lot of, I would say not just white people, but there was this like almost a sincere, like, I want to prove I'm not like those white people. Like, I'm better than the racist white people.
Yeah, those are the worst white people.
It was like, we're talking about racism in GR, and you came to a thing about racism in GR, and you took the time to tell us that you're not one of, I'm not a racist, you know, like those people, and here's why I'm not like those people. Yeah. And it's like, just sit down, shut the fuck up. But there was one woman, and I honestly, like, I'm going to say this.
You mentioned there were rules. The only rules were we could talk about anything that happened. We just weren't allowed to attribute it to a specific person.
Correct.
And we were not allowed to record anything.
Correct. So I've done none of that.
We are allowed to talk about what happened.
Correct. Okay, go ahead. So I'm within those guidelines.
Yes, you are.
Guess the race. She says, she gets up and she's talking about, again, like, I'm not a racist. I'm better than those white people. I'm not like that. That's that binary kind of, you know, good, bad, and I'm not like those people.
Well, the first question they asked was, what was your first experience with racism? That's what
experience,
the first
was the word experience?
Yeah, yeah,
what was the verb? Experience,
exposure,
engagement, exposure.
Something like that. Yeah.
Something so that white people could engage in that dialogue as well. And for me, I was like, well, I saw a bunch of racist shit when I was at this age and that age. Here you go. So this woman stands up and she's talking about her father being very racist and his friend, and they were, you know, buddies and they were good friends, and they were her uncle and her father. So their brothers are, you know, really steeped in supremacy and they're kind of doing inappropriate stuff. And one Christmas or something, somebody, one of the brothers gave her father a black doll, and there was some sort of inappropriate, you know, language and, you know, stuff about this black doll. And now prepare yourself, listeners. This is verbatim what she said. I just wanted to save that little black baby. I just wanted to save that little black baby. I was like dumbfounded. I was like, you just like put like to words like the most savior thing I've ever. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
And that was like, that was emblematic of the whole night.
Yeah, I just wanted to save the people that feel the need to talk. Like, I actually spoke like, you know, more one-on-one with a couple of people, and those were actually really decent conversations. One person I spoke to is a med student, or yeah, he's a med student right now here in Grand Rapids, and he recounted to me how he has noticed that the black residents, so he is below these residents, so the people that he reports to directly, are treated so much with so much less respect than the non-black residents.
Mm.
And that, and I talked to him, I said, well, A, that's great that you picked up on that, because it's a really important thing to note that, you know, these are quote unquote respectable black people who have gone through medical school, they're in their residency, they're highly educated, probably financially secure, certainly in some way, shape, or form, and yet still their color prevents them from being seen as equal with those that are on the same level as them. And it's important for people that are interacting in those worlds to note those things. I was actually pretty impressed that he, you know, not only took note of it himself, but also brought that to the conversation.
Was he a white guy or black guy?
Yeah, white guy, okay. White guy. Super white. Like, he said he's from like a small town, like not smaller than Grand Rapids, but near here. And his girlfriend, I think they met in Holland or something. They went to school there or something like that. Anyways, so I wouldn't characterize everybody that was there, but by far, everybody that felt the need to talk, that was the John they were on, like, for sure. Like,
yeah,
I'm not bad. Rah, 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 rah.
Well, and then there was a weird kind of like, I spoke to you about afterwards. I was like, wow, it was just, I don't know. Like, it felt like, not like what was the point, but like, we did the same thing in Philadelphia at the, you know, after the moment of silence and yep. When the, what is now the Philadelphia Real Coalition for Justice mm-hmm. came together, there was just like general community meetings. Like,
yep.
Let's get together town at this date, meetings. At this time. And there was there's an individual, Gabe, who I respect and love, that set up a scenario that was like inclusive. And it was literally basically like, white people shut the fuck up. We're going to let women. And you know what I mean? It was like, it was a certain feel to that. And from that came real action. This thing, it just didn't have any of that feel at all.
No.
And I mentioned it to you, and you said, well, and I don't know the organization or the group, but the people that did the discussion, it seems like their job in terms of their compensation is to have these discussions.
Right.
Not to end supremacy,
right.
not to end, you know, like stop and frisk, not to change legislation or law, not to, you know, have any, whatever their mission statement is, it seems to talk. And
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm not about that, but I certainly not, don't. I don't think I'm going to go to another one.
Not fun. No. So what's going on? What else is going on? I mean, we're in a new house. This is the first episode here at the not very unpacked new home of the John.
The GR John.
Yeah, the GR
and
John.
I put in the notes, our Christian move.
Oh, fuck.
And our boy, I don't like to out him, so I'm going to call him Dr. Smooth Mustache.
Yeah.
But Dr. Stash was like, listen, just, you know, when you see the Jesus fish on like a contractor's vehicle, run.
Run.
Go the other way.
Run.
And I kind of like, I don't say like, I was like, I didn't give it a lot of credence. I didn't like discount that data point, but I didn't think much of it. And I do remember the individual we bought this house from was super Christian, had all the
Bible quotes all over the place and shit.
Had like there was a big ass Bible like somewhere in the, and I don't,
like on display.
I kind of felt like it was over the top to the point that they were doing it for show to try and sell
like
the house.
I half thought it was like, oh, they maybe they think people will come through and be like, oh, it's
that's
like
a
nice
good Christian
people.
House. Yeah,
yeah. Live here.
Just like we unblackified our house, they Ubered Jesus to the house. Right. Out. So I thought maybe that, but and who knows? I don't know. I don't care to know more about this individual.
Never again.
But my fucking God. I was literally thinking when we sold our house, I went to Home Depot like a day or two before the closing and the walkthrough and got some spackle. I was worried like, oh, they're going to be pissed. Like, I took this thing down, this fixture that we had, and it damaged the wall. And I tried to like spackle it. I couldn't quite match the paint. I'm like, oh man, I was like nervous that like I left this one hole in the wall.
This motherfucker broke two chandeliers, ripped the banister off the side of our staircase going to our second level, broke the entire electrical system in our garage. Like,
and was just cool with it.
I was just let a rodent
chew through the roof.
What the fuck is going on here?
And then the way that it was presented, like the banister was like, oh, I had to take the banister down to get the bed in. I figured since I needed to get the banister off to get the bed down, I would just leave it off so it's easier for you to get your bed up. And I thought, oh wow, that's kind of cool. Until I got here and I was like, oh, what you mean is you ripped the fucker off and damaged the wall and can't put it back. That's what you, that's do me the favor,
that's
buddy.
The favor, you know, asshole.
Pissing
thanks.
On me and say it's raining. The hell. And the fridge, oh my fucking
don't
God.
Don't talk about it because I'll just get riled up and I want to be in a good mood.
I know you'll be in a good mood, but honestly,
I don't know how people
again,
live like this.
I paid a person to come and clean my house like on a regular. And then before we left, I was like, listen, I'm going to pay you extra, like double, and clean the shit out of it. Leave it really, really nice. It's a house. I'm trying to sell the house and I'm be a nice guy and I'm going to leave the house fucking clean. And that means like the fridge, the oven, like she fucking cleaned the shit out of it. It was all fucking day she's cleaning. This motherfucker left at the bottom of the fridge frozen an inch and a half of like beef juice and fucking Dr. Pepper and yogurt and mold. I fucking wanted to throw up. I had to chisel it off with a fucking like
I'm going to tweet a picture of it after we post the show.
Fucking disgusting.
Because it's really gross.
I wouldn't leave a fucking shit I rent
like my
like
thing
that.
Was they were living here up until like a few days before we moved in. So they lived with this shit in their fridge. They have a child. They fed their child out of that disgusting fridge that took me 2.5 hours to clean. I had to like
the fuck, man,
almost like Silkwood shower after.
Well, that, so that's our Christian move. It's over. We went back and
fuck.
Run from the Jesus fish.
Run.
And I got no problem with Jesus. It's just his followers that drive me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I also wanted to say that we're in a new house and like we're unpacking. There's boxes all over the place, and you did your shit. You got the kitchen. You're like, bam, unpack the kitchen. And we moved from a much bigger house to a much smaller house. Like the John is like half the size of our previous house.
Yeah,
and that was intentional. We're trying to cut costs so you can be an activist and do community activism work and don't have to worry about income, and it's mm-hmm. been worth it. But so your kitchen's a lot smaller.
Oh my
like
God.
A lot. Like the kitchen was the centerpiece. It was the mm-hmm. heart of our last house.
Yeah.
And here it's like
it's a side thought.
It's an afterthought.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like the servants' quarters go up the back and they cook the shit and bring it to the living room kind of
definitely
deal.
Definitely not.
So you've unpacked shit and it's tight. It's like there's a lot of stuff. And I'm making something. And you're like, oh, that'd be really good with chocolate salt. I'm like, oh, sweet. Where's the chocolate salt? You tell me like, oh, it's in the pantry on this, on the second shelf. It's going to be a little thing. It's on the back right shelf. It's, you know, towards the right. And it's the second one from the bottom. I'm like, what in the fuck? It was in the exact like – you had some sort of
but
like –
but I had just put it there.
I know you just put it there. But like that's a, like a photographic like – card catalog of fucking like
but
a
that's
thousand
how I
things.
See it though when you ask me where something is like that's how I see it. I see it like exactly where it
oh,
is.
Oh, that's why I don't debate with you because you're brutal. And you did that with like three different things. I'm like, where is this? You're like bottom shelf, left, right, third, down, blah, underneath of them. I'm like, what in the how the fuck did you know? I just put like 10 things away and I lost them already.
Yeah.
If it's not eyesight, like right in front of
you
me.
You have. I've asked you for some of them. You had it in your hand. I think it was the Aveda coupon. You're like, where did I?
It was my pocket. It wasn't my hand. It was my pocket.
As if that's better.
It's my back pocket. It's my back pocket.
All right, dude. Whatever.
Speaking of letters, I got one from the state of New Jersey saying that we could get a homestead exemption if we qualified for certain things. Mm-hmm. And so it's got all this information like, you know, you got to live here. You got to pay your taxes this date, that date. And there's an income. Like if you make more than this amount of money, you're out of luck. Mm. And then there's a fine print right underneath it, a little asterisk. And it said, New Jersey tax homestead letter. You can file an application regardless of income. So they're not saying you can't file. You can file regardless of income. But if your income is more than the amount stated above, we will deny your application. Mm. It's like, they had to print that. Like, I don't know if they got, like, sued or somebody's like, I have a right to fucking file my homestead exemption, even though you're telling me I'm overqualified and I make too much money and you're going to die me anyway. Like, wow. They printed those little asterisks. Like, you can do it, but we're going to die your ass. You're done.
Interesting. So we were in Canada and we stopped at the duty-free shop and we were coming home. And they had this candy bar sitting there. And it was called Flake. And it was like, eat chocolate a whole new way or whatever it was.
And I haven't seen it anywhere but this candy.
Yeah, I've never seen it anywhere before. And so I kick in the car, I rip it open, I bite it. I go to bite it and shit, like literally the fucking thing disintegrates. It's tasty as hell. But it's like I basically took a bath in fucking chocolate bits. And I don't quite understand what the purpose of it is.
Yeah.
You didn't believe me. You were like, I don't understand the thing. You're like, I'm going to have one of these. And then you were like, dude, you have to eat that shit over the fucking sink.
It's almost like if you took like shaved chocolate and then you like somehow like had the shaved chocolate like molded into a candy bar, but just barely, like with mm-hmm. like a wisp of like connectivity between the shavings of chocolate. So as soon as you cut it, all these shavings, it's like, phew. It literally, it rains chocolate. You can't eat it.
Well, I'll tell you that Flake is currently manufactured by Cadbury.
So it's definitely Canadian.
And it was first developed in 1920, as a matter of fact.
What?
By an employee of Cadbury's. When the excess from the moles was drained off,
it
fell in a stream and created folded chocolate with flaking properties.
Yo, did I not say that?
You did.
Right, my first thing when I bit it and it fell apart, I'm like, this seems like an accident. It's like, oh, let's put a wrapper on it and sell it.
Yeah.
And it is.
Yeah, and it's been really, there's been ice cream flavors called 99 Flakes, which are vanilla soft serve ice cream in a wafer cone with a half size flake bar inserted. So that's like a common thing is people use them like to stick into things.
Now that would be fucking amazing.
You'd like, get like a cone.
Get a cone, put the flake right in the middle and then soft serve around it. That would be unbelievable.
That's smart.
I would do that.
And they put them in McFlurries as well. They have different, they have like a flake dark, a flake praline, a flake dipped.
See, the way
a flake
it,
snow.
The way it breaks up kinds. Would make it really good for commercial use.
I know.
McDonald's could just throw that right into their fucking flurry machine.
So, but it's really popular in Great Britain, in Australia, and in Ireland. So there's your answer about what the deal is with the flake bar.
That was the weirdest thing.
So strange. So let's go through some feedback.
Let's do it.
Let's see. We had a voicemail. So let's play that first.
Hey, good afternoon. This is Forrest Bivens calling from the Great White North, a.k.a. Canada. You know where y'all just had that vacation over in Montreal? Side note, y'all just drove right by me when you were coming back on the 401, London, Ontario.
I don't know if
you
remember
even seeing the sign. It's not that special. Anyway, your husband knows me from Twitter.
I love how they address me only.
And I just called in to give you a little feedback.
He knows you're the host.
You guys crack me up. I've been listening for about a month and a half now, and you crack me up so much that I decided I got to go back to the beginning and listen to them all.
Oh, no.
Just to see if you guys were that funny from the get-go. Or
we weren't.
Into that.
She was the host.
You know, exchange y'all be doing. So, anyway, that's all I really had. Keep up the good work. I appreciate your sense of humor and the informative nature of your podcast. Because, you know, up here, I don't always catch everything that's going down. I try. But nevertheless, that's all I had. Keep up the good work. Thanks. Bye.
Aw, nice. Thanks, Forrest. That's awesome. Thanks for the feedback.
Forrest is one of my, like, you know, I do the follow back, so I follow like tons of people, but there's only like so many people that get on my list, like my favorites, and he's definitely on that list.
Nice.
And in addition, I'd say he's one of my, like, you know, like, I don't want to put numbers on it, but I engage with him a lot and talk with him a lot, in particular about like race and anti-black racism. And he's one of my favorites. We,
awesome.
We have some really good, deep conversations, and he's very informed. You know, he's a, I don't give a fuck about your feels kind of black guy.
That's my kind of black guy.
Mm-hmm. He was just on, and I'll see if I can find it. And I didn't catch it, and I apologize because he did tweet me and tell me he was going to be on it. He was on a Canadian show.
Oh, like, if we can find it, we'll put on the show notes for sure.
Yeah.
It's
like CBC and, yeah, I forget exactly what
Maybe next show we can play a snippet of it if we can find it.
He was on CBC's Touch Radio talking about their, I guess it's carding practice? Police carding?
Police carding. Oh, I can see that.
And Shirley and Clove talk about it, and I don't don't even understand it fully, so maybe he can come on and tell us about it.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Or at least give us a call and let us know about it. If you want to leave us a voicemail, you can call 657-JAWNERS. That's 657-JAWNERS. We also got an email from Carolyn. She says, "Hi, Interracial John. I'm a new fan of your podcast. Big ups. I'm based in Toronto. We have a very large Canadian following, I've noticed, but okay."
Dude, you guys are going to just, I got to tell you, Leslie hates Canadians. She's got like an avowed hate of Canadians.
Okay, I'll talk about that some other time. But I'm based in Toronto, although I grew up in Edmonton and lived in Montreal for 5 years. I just listened to your episode from August 18th about your trip to Montreal. I very much appreciate your comments about Canadian racism. It's exhausting how Canadians like to pretend it doesn't exist. But an important correction, she says, our current Prime Minister has only been in power for 9 years, not 2 decades. Hopefully he won't be in power much longer. All right, Carolyn, thanks for the correction and letting us know, and big ups back to you in Toronto.
I said 20 years and the correction's 9.
Yes.
Okay. So that's off by a factor of 2.
You know, 2. Okay. Okay. Yeah, so that was cool. And then we got a DM from Clay also.
He did, as a writer and a tweet as well. He says, "I'm listening to your podcast," and I, you know, maybe, should we read DMs? Is that meant to be private? I don't know. "I'm listening to your podcast, the Rapey Steve Harvey episode, and you two are hysterical and clever. I've never been a fan of Steve Harvey. The idea of him being a relationship expert, a man with 3 failed marriages, ack. It says, listening to your summation of the first season opener, everything I've ever suspected about him, you've confirmed. You two work well together."
Aw, thanks, Clay. That's awesome. Again, you can leave us a voicemail at 657-JAWNERS, and you can email us at interracialjohn@gmail.com, or you can just leave us an actual review on iTunes or Stitcher. We'd love those. If they're 5 stars, we will definitely read it on the air, or play it on the air, read it on the air, whichever way you want to provide that. So we do have a guest today, really excited, or first time on the show, one Nick Jew. And so let's grab her and get this going.
Let's do it.
All right.
Hello.
Hey, Nick. How Hello. Are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing good. So glad you could come on the show. We're so excited to have you here. If you're ready, we'll just jump right into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, awesome. So those who are not familiar with our guest today, she is one of the hosts of the What's the Tea podcast with her best friend, Reggie. That's at R2TheEdgy. She's a native Californian that relocated to North Carolina 2 years ago for fun and adventure. Now, that's an interesting, usually people go to California for that. We'll have to get into that in a minute. She's a calculated risk taker with a love for food, theater, and laughter. She's a super hippie Christian with her feet firmly planted on the ground. She has no husband and no kids. Let's welcome to the show, Nick Jew. Woo!
What's the tea?
Yes.
What's up, internet?
Okay. Well, first of all, tell us a little bit about What's the Tea, how you and Reggie met, and kind of what the show's all about.
Sure. So first, thank you so much for having me. Sorry, my schedule was really hella complex, but I'm here now. Thank
it was
you.
Made for today. 9-2 Nick Jew. I said that. It was
yes,
perfect.
Yes. So Reggie and I actually met through a mutual friend, very good friend of ours in theater. And she found out that we were doing a benefit together. And she was like, "Oh, you two will love each other." And we connected on Facebook before we actually ever met in person. And then once we met in person, it was like we had known each other our entire lives.
Nice.
And he actually turned me on to the Black Guy Who Tips. And from that, I mean, we used to talk on the phone every night for like an hour, hour and a half. And I was planning on moving to North Carolina, and he was going to be soon moving to New York City. So he was like, "Why don't we start a podcast? It would be a great way for us to keep up regularly and, you know, whatever, whatever." So that's how all of that happened.
That's like the best origin podcast story. I love it. I love it. And I've said that our podcast serves the same thing, that it's kind of like a once a week, kind of like, you know, focused listening and attention and catch up. Like, it's nice for a relationship, whether it's platonic, best friends, husband, wife, whatever.
It really is. And sometimes it's kind of bad for our relationship because we won't like talk outside of the show. Then we will catch up and be like, "Man, we haven't talked off mic."
So. Yeah, it's true. Oh, we have this phrase where we're always like, "Oh, save it for the podcast, save it for the podcast."
Right. And we don't do that. We'll like, so we're on a G chat group with our other friend, and we text a lot in a group and separately. So we're in communication pretty much every day, and it's no holds barred. The stuff that we talk about on the podcast is usually like, oh, I saw this article or whatever. So we never run out of shade to throw.
I love
the show. It's one of my favorite podcasts. It's just so funny. And I'm actually, honestly, I assumed that you guys knew each other from like when you were kids. Like that's how at ease you guys seem with each other. So.
So when I was a kid, he wasn't born.
Well, you know, someone should make the like Rod and Karen, the Black Guy Who Tips podcast, like tree.
Oh, yeah.
Like all the podcasts that have been kind of like the branches. Yeah, because that's quite a few.
I think that's it'd be a big tree by now for sure. The trunk is massive. So you're originally from California. What was your childhood like, and what was it like growing up in California? I'm a diehard East Coaster, although we live in the Midwest now, and Drew's from Chicago, so.
I'm so jealous of California. I'd live in California in a heartbeat.
So this is the thing. I love California. I'm from the Bay Area. I'm from all over the Bay Area. I was born on the peninsula, so like, I don't know if that means anything to people who aren't from California. So like where Stanford is, if you cross a little bridge, there's a hood adjacent little town called East Palo Alto. That's where I'm from. But my parents divorced when I was very young, so my mom moved to the other side of the Bay. So I had like 1 foot in the hood and 1 foot in the suburbs my entire growing up experience. And then when I was an adult, I moved to just south of Oakland. So I've been there. I was there for like 15 years.
Okay. But you can't beat the weather.
You can beat it. It's pretty boring, and there's one kind of really long season.
Yeah, I like the changes of seasons. Like, I would miss it.
Spring. Exactly.
Yo, Leslie,
winter sucks here, I know.
We literally just moved to Michigan, and this town broke a 100-year record with, like, 180 inches of snow.
They broke it before we moved.
That's like 15 feet of snow. They had 15 feet of fucking snow. I mean, so much so, it's obscene. It's way too much snow.
Kind of miserable.
That's like different,
North Carolina,
though.
It snows here kind of like 1 week a year. There's like a couple of inches that happen to stay. So this is enough for me where there's all four seasons, but nothing too nuts.
Yeah, North Carolina's good. I've been, there's a Raleigh, Durham. There's some nice areas.
Right. And I know you're in a show right now. What tell us about that?
So without exposing all of my business, because people on the internet are crazy, it's a musical. Very funny musical, and I'm pretty much the only female lead. And it's funny because this was my very first audition since moving here. And when I was back home, I basically did theater like my second job. Like I got my degree in theater. I graduated like 15 years ago and have been working semi-professionally and professionally ever since, but you know, maintaining a regular job too. But when I moved here, I just figured because of work and not really knowing the theater scene that I was kind of done doing that. But then I was bored and I didn't have any friends really. And I would come home and just watch TV. So it's like, well, 90% of the people I know from theater. So maybe this would be a good way for me to meet some people. So I just went on an audition on a fluke, wasn't expecting to get cast, and I totally got cast.
As the lead.
I love it. That's awesome.
That's incredible. That's good for you.
That's such a great that you still have that outlet and are able to still continue to engage with the thing that you love. I feel like that's so important as we get older to make sure we're continuing to do those things. So
there was definitely something missing, and I kept trying to put my finger on what it was, and I thought it was just because I was lonely or because my friends and family weren't here, but it was that for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you found it. We used to get to Broadway easily from Philly. It was about an hour and a half train ride, and we'd see 2, 3, 4 shows a year easily, and I'll miss it.
I went to New York City for the very first time, like, a year ago, right when I moved here. I couldn't believe it had taken me so long to get out there.
Yeah, it's definitely, I grew up in New York, so I'm very spoiled in that regard.
Right.
And it's funny too, because you try and like, I don't know, when you're a kid or certainly even when you're younger, you think that your norm is everybody else's norm. So I remember like getting older and be like, what do you mean you can't just go to a show? You know, I'd walk up to people like, what borough are you from? Like the people over from like Connecticut, they were like, I don't know what a borough is. So it's kind of funny. And what was the other thing I was going to ask you too about? So no husband, no kids, which is, we are no kids also, which is, I think as we've gotten older, some people seem to look at us like we're slightly weird.
It's gotten less. I would say
because now we're like past child rearing.
No,
years.
But like in the 90s, even right, just culturally, you know, it's like, what do you mean you're not having kids? You're not having kids. What do you mean you're not having kids? Like that was a big deal in the 90s, 2000, and I think now like 2015, it, you know, I know multiple other people in my generation and younger that have consciously decided not to have children. It's not rare.
Yes.
I think when we were in 97, 98, people looked at us like we were bizarre.
Mm. Especially when you're married. I know I used to do that to married people, and I've learned since that that's kind of rude. But it's not that we're trying to be in your business like that, but usually it's like, but you two are so awesome, and why don't you go in and make another awesome human being? Mm. But I get it now.
We'd get that, and then, and again, it wasn't meant like, as a cudgel, don't want to like hurt us with it, but they'd be like, oh yeah, she might regret it, you know?
Right.
Like, well.
Or we might not. One of the two.
That's I don't know. We're talking about going to Jamaica in January.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying.
Difficult.
I'm just
with
saying.
The kids. So yeah.
It's just kind of something that has never happened. It's not that I haven't wanted it to. I think I spent the better part of my 20s not wanting kids, and then when I turned like 27, I was like, oh my god, I want nothing more than a baby, and it started to inform my relationship choices very negatively, and it made me make some really horrible decisions. And then I started to have some health issues, and now I'm in the place where like I would love to, but it's not the, I'm just not focused on it like I was before, and I'd rather just enjoy my life as is, and if it happens, great, but I'm not looking for it.
It's funny because I've had friends where they've been in that same place, and then it's
they
like
pregnant.
It makes a way, like all of a sudden it's like boom, hey, what's up, I'm gonna be a mom. It's been through lots of different, you know, avenues. They haven't all been the same way, but it's just been really interesting because I've seen that.
We like, also personally know four relationships of married couples combined, like 50 60 years of marriage, yeah, that ultimately demised because of issues related to children. One wanting, one not wanting, wanting to do, you know, in vitro, not wanting to, so forth and so on.
Yeah, that's
there's such a high rate of people who are going through like fertility treatments and adoptions and stuff like that who end up getting divorced.
Mm. It's a lot of stress, and it's a lot of like unintentional blame. I think that people are so used to thinking that, oh, it's the natural thing, it should be easy, and then it becomes like a burden to, you know, just be doing all of those things. And I know that it can be really stressful, and it's also monetarily like a lot of money, so that adds a whole nother stress to the equation as well. Like you're spending all this money to get pregnant, and like obviously the kid is going to cost a lot of money too, so it's a lot of different stresses all kind of piled up together. I think like most couples fight about money, they fight about sex, and unfortunately both of those things are tied into having a child. So it makes it a really tricky situation when there's problems in that area, for sure.
And I'm thinking of the four couples, and in one of them, the man in his 40s divorced within like 10 months, fertility treatments, new younger bride,
twins
right? Yeah. So okay. because the kids issue was big, they divorced, and then boom, kids right away.
Right
twins.
Away.
Yeah. I think people lie to themselves a lot too. Like there's a lot of things that you go, oh, I can deal with that. Or you change your mind because, you know, people just change when you get, that's one of the things that frightens me about being married is just, I was talking to Charmaine about this today. It's just like, I have to promise to be who I am for the rest of my life and evolve and change and accept you as you evolve and change for the rest of your life. And hopefully we change together. And if we don't, hopefully we can figure it out. Like it frightens me.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's what you said, the together, right? Whether you're on a path together and life changes and things change and you write, you know, you have a plan and that plan goes out the window and you hope that you're on that same path together. And,
right.
You know, and if you're not, it's just not going to work regardless. And I think sometimes people that aren't on that path together think like, and Leslie and I have had this discussion that in relationships, there's this sort of assumptive like, okay, well, we've been dating for so long, so now we're monogamous. And okay, we've been monogamous for so long, well, we might as well get engaged. And well, we've been engaged for so long, let's just get married. Well, we're married, let's just have kids. And not quite that like ambivalent, but to some degree, it's not nearly as thought out and planned for some folks.
Or even just discussed. I think a lot of people don't discuss what that next phase
just let it happen.
Be like in reality, which, I mean, it works for lots of people, but I think a healthier way to go about it is to talk about that stuff. So, and what you're talking about is exactly what that conversation would entail. Like, you know, things are going to change. Are we prepared to have those changes, you know, in our relationship, in our lives? You know, it just takes a lot of work to do that.
Right. And my parents' marriage sucked. And, you know, my dad's marriage is not the greatest. My mom has been remarried since then. My brother got a divorce. So I don't come from a great deal of people who have been successful at marriage. Luckily, my friends have been in some really awesome marriages. So I've gotten to see firsthand, like, it is not a fairy tale. It's not always super awesome, but I'm not privy to the dirt of their marriage. I just know it's not perfect instinctively. And I think that's a healthy relationship to have with somebody else's marriage. Because some people, they go through it in front of everybody.
They're busy,
you know, when they're mad, whatever. And I, for the most part, look at my friend's relationship and I see a bunch of people who are on the same team who sometimes, you know, you have arguments with teammates, but the end goal is to win the game. So,
well said.
Maybe one day.
Yeah.
Should we do some news?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's jump into it.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
So the VMAs were on Sunday. I don't know if you watched, Nick Drew, or not.
I did not watch. I only tuned in to watch Kanye receive his
You saw it all then.
Well,
you missed it. There was the shade from Nicki, but that was the Kanye was.
Yeah.
He's always extra, but that was a lot.
His middle name should be Extra, actually. Kanye Extra West. He, for sure, you know, got the big Video Vanguard Award and gave like a 20-minute, I don't even know if I could call it a soliloquy. It was pretty.
Call it what it is. It's declaration for presidency. He's running for 2020. He's going for presidency. Kanye 2020.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. And Miley Cyrus hosted the award show. And for the first time, and I noticed people were, I didn't watch the show either, neither did we, but, you know, Block Twitter is always there for us in our times of need. And so I watched vicariously through all of the fabulous Black people that were actually watching the show and tweeting about it, which is more fun than watching the show, I would reckon. But they drew 9.8 million total viewers, this being on 10 Viacom networks. They played on MTV, MTV2, VH1, VH1 Classic, CMT, Logo, BET, Centric, Comedy Central, and TV Land, simulcasted it all together at the same time. And it was a drop from last year's viewers by 1.8 million.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's definitely not a good look. It hit a high in 2011 with 12.4, and they're down at 9.8 now. And to have that many, you know, TV stations playing it at one time, I know people were a little pissed. I don't know why they were watching BET, but they were mad that it was on BET. That was one thing I heard a lot. And then, of course, the spectacle that is Miley Cyrus. I don't even know what to say about that. Whatever that whole thing is.
Do you have Nikki's quote?
It's just ridiculous. The what's good one?
No, when I won, she goes, let's talk about, it was like, this bitch here.
Yeah, this bitch over here. That,
and we have the bitch who wanted to talk about me, whatever.
Yeah.
And now that I'm here, what's good or whatever. Yeah. The best part is the reaction that somebody has Miley recorded when she heard her name. She's like, what?
And the best was Nikki started off thanking her pastor. She's like, I want to thank my pastor. Now, back to this bitch over here. Like, oh, that was a swivel, Nikki. You just turned that right around. I wonder what her pastor's face looked like in that moment. It's pretty funny.
He was probably really embarrassed.
Oh, too funny. And I guess there was some sort of Taylor Swift make out something. I don't really know all of that stuff. But then, of course, They had quite a few, I would say, racially insensitive moments in the evening.
Well, I saw people tweeting about the Amy, whatever her name is, joke.
Rebel Wilson.
But I never heard what the joke was.
Yeah, the joke was she basically came out and she wore a, she had a jacket on and she
said, it was a police uniform, like a police jacket.
Yeah, but she said that, you know, a lot of people have been talking about police brutality, but I want to talk about police strippers. I hate police strippers. And she took off her jacket and she had a fuck the stripper police t-shirt. And then she didn't stop there. She then mentioned that she hates this injustice, hence the shirt.
Mm-mm.
Was what she said.
Mm-mm.
Because, you know, that's definitely appropriate when people are literally dying and just having complete disregard. Dre had tweeted out, when's the last time you heard a Holocaust, Sandy Hook, or Columbine joke at an award show?
Listen.
Yeah, he's kind of right about
just
that.
Just saying. Haven't heard that. Miley also finished up the evening by calling... who was it that she called? She called somebody her mammy at the end of the show.
Miley did?
Yeah. Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg, right. Who's her mammy. Mm-hmm. Because that's appropriate to say on a live television program. She also showed her bare nipple.
Her whole titty.
Yes, the whole thing was, it was out.
Man, your titties is out.
Yep. Pretty much. Wow. So she who decided to tone police Nicki Minaj earlier in the week. It's interesting.
Had her titties out.
And then the whole media did it again, like calling Nicki basically an angry black woman. So, like, people get to call you out and you have to respond graciously.
You have to. I don't even think it was
You only have to respond graciously if you're black. If you're white, you could say whatever the fuck you want to say.
No, we were reading along on Twitter. As Leslie said, we weren't really watching it. We were doing fun on Twitter. And I don't think it was within an hour of her making the comment. Someone tweeted like, you know, countdown to when people are going to call her an angry black woman. Yeah. You know, the think pieces are going to come out about,
there was so many,
you know, she's not support. She's not a feminist, all kinds of shit. We all got to support Miley now.
I mean, Salon referred to her in a tweet of the incident, I guess, in the article they were publishing, as she said that her comments were savage.
Yes.
And expletive laden. She said the word bitch. That's it.
Savage. Right.
Miley's response to her had three bleeps in it because she used the word fuck three times. Expletive laden.
Savage, though.
Savage? Really?
And her titty was out.
Come on now. Come on.
I really take great umbrage with the media's language and framing when it comes to black folk. You know, all just, I think it was Karen on SiriusXM was on her show, said she refuses to use any animal, anything in reference to black bodies, people, anything anymore. Just, she's not going to allow it. And this same thing with savage. It's just, you know, like, I'm not sure if it is a dog whistle, but it just, it's over for calling her a bitch. Come on.
What it is it's okay for them. They think that that's an okay commentary to make. And it just shows what is acceptable.
Yeah. And the way it would go is they say, you know, savage, and editors read it, and nobody says anything. If it's a white woman and the word savage is in there, someone along the chain says, hey, you know what? It's kind
of
harsh.
They wouldn't even think of a white woman as savage. That's the difference, though.
Right. True.
That is the difference. True. They wouldn't ever conceive of calling Taylor Swift or even Miley Cyrus a savage. But Nicki Minaj, oh, yeah, it's right off the tongue for them. It's gross. Oy. Anyways, the VMAs suck. And actually, I thought about watching it, but when I read the list of the performers, I literally didn't know 70% of them.
Yeah, I'm old.
I'm old. And I was like, nope, it's not for me. Sorry. Deuces. Right.
If you're visiting and he was watching the red carpet or whatever, I'm like, who are these people? What are these haircuts? What is happening? I've not heard any of these songs. I don't know anybody on here.
That's how I was.
So on to not better, but crabbier news? I don't know how you look at it. Remember the judge in Pennsylvania that was labeled the Kids for Cash judge that was sending juveniles to a juvenile detention facility?
Oh, yeah.
For reportedly receiving kickbacks totaling about $1 million.
Yeah.
So these private developers that are building these juvenile detention facilities, he was getting cash from them for sending kids to these facilities as a judge. You couldn't get more fucking heinous. And so he got sentenced today. His name is Mark Ciavarella Jr. Mark Ciavarella Jr., no longer a judge. Former Pennsylvania judge, sentenced to 28 years in prison in connection to a bribery scandal that roiled the state's juvenile justice system. Former Luzerne County judge. So he's convicted of taking $1 million in bribes from developers.
Jesus Christ.
$1 million for fucking kids' lives, man. They overturned. So the Supreme Court tossed out 4,000 convictions that had been issued by Ciavarella between 2003 and 2008, saying he violated the constitutional rights of the juveniles, including right to legal counsel and to an intelligently enter a plea. But there's a little bit more that's...
No, let me say, guess the race of those 4,000 individuals. I bet you 90% of them are black kids. And that's the really, like, disgusting part of the whole scenario, too.
And I can't remember, it's not in this article, but when the scandal came out and they were looking at just sort of, like, the data that they had, there's different, like, you can give a warning, you can give probation, or you can send them to this juvenile detention center. And independent of race, his sentencing rate to the detention center was like four times any other judge in the entire district. You know, it was like it was a huge outlier. But so his attorneys wrote a letter asking for leniency. They had asked for a reasonable sentence in court, saying in effect that he's already been punished enough because mm-hmm. the media attention has exceeded coverage given to many and almost all capital murderers. And despite protestations, he will forever and unjustly be branded as the Kids for Cash judge.
But he is the fucking Kids for Cash judge.
Unfairly and forever. He should get a slap on the wrist.
Oh my gosh.
What about the kids' lives he's ruined?
For real. I mean, some of these kids probably ended up, you know, so they voided these convictions from 2003.
What about the ones that served and were out?
Listen, there's probably, I guarantee there are kids that by getting in the system in this manner ended up not being able to get out of a loop of prison to pipeline. You know what I'm saying? Like this was the start of a teenager in 2003. It was 12 years ago. So now that's a 20-something-year-old man with a conviction and a record. Who knows what happened from this? Fucked up and destroyed kids' lives for cash.
Yeah, I would like to know if they could have added up all of the sentences that he doled out, and like that should have been
for
what
real.
His conviction mm-hmm. was for. Because to me, that's fair. Then, like, oh, well, this is what you enacted on other people in this heinous crime, so that's what you're going to be. What's going to be visited on you? Like, I think that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about in our last episode the genetic markers of stress and different. You know, you can see in victims of the Holocaust, their kids and various grandkids have these genetic markers of that stress in their life that can get passed on. Who knows what the damage this judge has done to 4,000 individuals?
More than that, because that's just the 4,000 that were issued, the families. And then this $1 million, did he bequeath this to his heirs?
Yeah, who knows?
You know what I'm saying?
Say they
like
they
get
it back.
To continue to reap the benefits of these fucking heinous ass. Things that he did. Oh, God.
Yeah.
So
the, one of the kids said, our life is still affected by it. There's post-traumatic stress. Our life is ruined. It's never going to be the same. Mm. I'd like to see that happen to him. Mm. You know, it's the same with, I feel like, child predators. You know, you just, the damage is so pervasive, you know, for the rest of that individual's life. It's just, there is no amount of prison that is, you know, I'm not saying I believe in an eye for an eye justice, but. Man, 4,000 kids. That's fucking ridiculous.
Mm. Goodness. Oh, gosh. The other story that's been in the news a lot is this Kentucky clerk that's refusing to conduct same-sex marriages despite several courts, including the Supreme Court, saying that she has to. This chick, she's just beyond. Cam Davis, that's her name. She just refuses to do her actual goddamn job. She's a county clerk, and people would come, same-sex couples, to come and get married, and she refuses. She refuses to do it. Here's a...
The Supreme Court denied your stay. Based on what?
I would ask you all to...
Why are you not issuing marriage licenses today?
Because I'm not.
Under
Why?
Whose authority? Are you not issuing
God's authority?
Did lawyers tell you?
I don't
did
God tell you to do this? Did God tell you to treat us?
I don't
like this.
I've asked you all to leave. You are interrupting my
You can
business.
Call the police if you want us to leave. You can call the police. I pay your salary. I pay your salary.
We pay
I pay you to discriminate against me right now. That's what I'm paying for. That's what I'm paying for. I'm paying for this memory with my partner that I love that I've been with for 17 years. What's the longest you've been with someone that you've been married to someone?
Ooh, girl!
Hey, I'm asking you.
Just push back leaving. Away. You all are more than welcome to stay. Just push back away from the counter.
No. No.
Just push back
We're
away
not
from
leaving
the counter.
Until we have a license. We're not leaving
then
until
you're
we have a license.
Do your job.
Well, when you call the police.
Do
when they come, I will ask them to arrest you.
Do your job.
Call the police.
Oh, my God.
Just saw something roll down the timeline that this lady unknowingly gave a marriage license to a trans man. Ha ha!
That's probably about right.
In fact, if I was, that would be the greatest thing. Just have like every trans couple like go flood this office. Be like, look, chick, you don't know what you're doing. And how many, you know, and what's her rationale? Is it Bible? Is it?
Yes, God told her.
So how many couples has she given marriage license to that have had divorces?
She's had three divorces herself.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, she has illegitimate kids and has been divorced four times.
And she's the bearer of moral high ground. Okay, got it.
She said that in a statement from her lawyers that she had received death threats, but that she would neither resign nor relent. Quote, to issue a marriage license which conflicts with God's definition of marriage, with my name affixed to the certificate, would violate my conscience. I have no animosity towards anyone and harbor no ill will. To me, this has never been a gay or lesbian issue. It's about marriage and God's word, end quote.
So I just want to know, where in God's word does it say you can be divorced three times? Like, which one of your four marriages is sanctified?
Yep.
Which one?
I don't know. Maybe the last one?
You know, honestly, I feel like there's some sort of, like, it's a form of, like, exposure trolling, but not quite. There's some other, something going on where, like, look at all the press and the media. Like, honestly, the cycle's going to be, she gets all this death threats. She's under attack. She's going to have to do something. She's going to have to quit. Oh, woe is her. She gets a GoFundMe. She writes a fucking book.
It's already started.
The whole fucking thing. And people know it. And they can, like, I don't know if it's, like, they do it deliberately or they just sort of, like, are so, like, obtusely fucking passionate about this fucking, you know, viewpoint of theirs that they end up in that pattern. But it's like deliberate. Like, she's doing it on purpose. Like, she could run out and give a marriage license, but under her breath, be kind of shitty about it and go home and what the fuck does it matter? But no, I'm not going to do it. Not with my name. And now the news is here. Fucking it's.
There's, like, people, like, supporting her. This one gentleman, Flavis McKinney, 72, said he come to the courtyard to stand up for God and his word and to stand up for our clerk. Quote, I've raised five children, 13 grandchildren, and four great-grandchildren. He's retired. He's been married 52 years to the same wife, and God has blessed us because we've done it God's way, not man's way. We've obeyed God. But she hasn't. So right. What are you even talking about right now?
That's the thing. Like, if you're reading the same Bible, in the two places that homosexual behavior is condemned, neither one of them referencing two consenting adults that love each other, by the by, you had to pass like 385 other condemnations of your sexual behavior as a straight person, including her divorces. So why is it okay for you to stand up for her, but not for these people?
And the thing is, not an appointed position. It's a voted position. Oh. So it's an elected position. So to get this bitch out, they literally have to do like a recall. It's going to cost like money and effort for these people to get rid of this bigot that's discriminating against the people that pay her fucking salary. It's so gross and disgusting and sick. And I don't even know what to say about it. And literally she'll probably have a like reality show by this time next year. That's like God's honest truth. And that's the saddest part of it, of the whole thing. Ugh.
And that is the God's honest truth.
We need some fucking, need a pile cleanser in here. Come on, Drew. Get something going here.
Hold on. my volume's turned down. Wait here. Wait. It's your president, Barack Obama, lame duck blackness. And this time he's doing it to Mount McKinley, or I should say Mount Denali. It's been under contention for many, many years. Mount McKinley was actually Denali. Alaskans have been calling it Denali forever. It's a Alaskan Native American name meaning high one. It's from the Athabascan, tribe. And it's been a bone of contention for a long, long time. Different legislators have tried to change the name, and President Obama, before his visit to the great state of Alaska, announced he's going to make it happen. Got that veto pen. It will be Denali. So kudos to you, Obama.
He's just been out here like fairy godfather and stuff. I'm coming to your hood. Let me just sign this off for you right quick. Boom, boom.
You got like a wish list when he comes to visit. Rub the lamp.
Yes. I love it.
He's trying to, not like, headed off at the pass, but it's like, oh, I'm going to Alaska. Like, what do I know about Alaska? Oh, Mount McKinley, the minute. All right, let's just do it. Before he even arrives, he's going to have like a ticker tape parade kind of deal. You know what I'm saying? Mm. But I like it.
I like it too. I think it's good.
Exonerating felons, doing all kinds of good shit.
And then, of course, people in Ohio were the big holdups for this thing. They're all upset because I guess McKinley's from Ohio. Who even knew that? For real. Did you know that, Nick, too?
No.
See?
Nobody I don't know anything about President McKinley, nor do the people who are up in arms about the change in the name.
Thank you.
You know, and the only reason there's this like faux outrage, you know, like feigning outrage. And it's really just because it's a Native American name. It's the same reason that people throw out White Lives Matter and Police Lives Matter and All Lives Matter, because it's in response to Black Lives Matter. And it's meant to detract and tear it down. And the people that were shitty about this were doing the same thing. It's ridiculous.
I think it's great. Denali is also the name of the vampire tribe that's in Alaska in the Twilight books.
Oh, right.
See that? Little pop culture extra information.
They've already changed it on Wikipedia. It says Denali is the highest.
It's in Denali. Nice. Boom. All right. Well, we'll have to shout out to them and good on you, Alaska, and hopefully he'll have a great trip out there. Is he going now?
I think he's coming soon. I don't know when he is.
I think he's there now because I thought I saw a little vine of him like doing a traditional Native dance with some kids at the school today.
I love when he'd be going places. And his most recent trips, he was in Jamaica just going crazy out there in Kenya. Like, everything about it. It's been good. I like lame duck Obama.
Yes.
It's the best Obama we've had yet.
I can't wait for, honestly, I can't wait, but when he's out of office, he's going to be young. And I hope he does a lot of.
I heard he's going to be working or teaching at Columbia. I heard that.
I saw that too.
Yeah. That'd be a fucking class to take. Cool, yeah. Can I audit that?
I don't know. Maybe.
Mm. So, wait a minute. I got more music.
Oh, boy. Yes, all cops. I hate this segment, but you know, they're always doing something. And this comes from a small town in Vermont, Rutland, Vermont, who has been strip searching black men as they step off the train. Mm-hmm. In 2010, this small town had a population of about 16,000 people, but it has a big problem. It's plagued with heroin, which is pretty bad in and of itself, but it also is just always been perpetuating long-standing issues of institutional racism. So there's a wrong way to carry out jobs, obviously the right way. And so basically these two white police officers, John Johnson and Earl Post, began strip searching black men coming off the Amtrak train there.
Black people haven't been doing heroin like that since the 70s.
And I still like right there on the platform, they strip search them?
Yes, they pull them off.
In public.
Mm-hmm. He said Andy Todd, who's the only black officer on Rutland's entire force, filed a lawsuit that led to an internal affairs investigation that showed when Johnson found white people with drugs, he arrested them 12% of the time. When he found black people with drugs, he arrested them 87% of the time.
Wow.
That's
that privilege, man.
It's crazy. Stockmanosa, whatever your thoughts on racial profiling, studies show the practice actually makes police less effective. And officers who abuse their authority over black people tend to not take issue with abusing their authority in general. Duh. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slippery slope.
It's crazy. Johnson would sleep with the same women he used as informants. This has all came out in this investigation because it shows you if he's okay violating the rights of black people, that then his entire moral compass is completely fucked and out of whack. And he set out to seek vengeance on a black man who, after he was wrongfully arrested, sued the city and won a civil rights settlement.
So he was going to get him. I was wrong the first time and you won a civil infraction legitimately. So now I'm really going to get you.
Yep.
Lovely.
Yes. So fuck you.
What's this town in Vermont?
Rutland, Vermont.
Yeah, I'll take them off that list. I've never visited Rutland, Vermont.
And I'd
Vermont.
Like to know what all the standers have to say about
Bernie. That's Vermont.
Bernie's state.
Wow.
He'd like to make you believe he comes from some idyllic, colorblind non-racist Shangri-La in the great white north of Vermont.
A shining colorless hill on the mount.
Oh, more like shining a turd. Anyways, So, yeah, so that's been going on. Actually, I had like three other stories for this, but we'll just keep it there with that because I can't with the police at all.
And, you know, that's a that statistic, the 88 versus 12. Mm. That you just see that all down the line, not just in the first encounter with a police officer. They have personal discretion as to whether arrest or not arrest. Then the prosecutor has personal discretion whether to criminalize, you know, with a sledgehammer or a tack hammer, how hard they go. The grand jury's got some discretion. The judge has discretion. And every turn, every phase, from here on out into sentencing, it favors white people.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Well, wait a minute. Where's my... Speaking of terrible...
It's a GOP clown car.
I miss those kids. Uh-huh. So we haven't done the GOP clown car in a while, but apparently this was too juicy to pass up. Sarah Palin interviewed Trumbull-Stiltskin.
Is that like a Muppet interviewing a sock? I don't understand.
It kind of is, I guess. And it was it's her show On Point, and it's on this fucking like, I'll just play it.
Music. Ugh.
I don't like what I see happening to America.
Sorry. It's on the One America News Network, OAN. That's a thing, One America. And every time I always mock this shit when like trolls and like ridiculous people are like, look at this thing, very white guy, look at this. And it's always like Liberty, Truth, Freedom, Patriot.org news. Like, it's like throwing a bunch of fucking One America news. Anyway.
Infrastructure of our country is a laughingstock all over the world. Our airports, our bridges, our roadways, it's falling apart. It's a terrible thing to see. Our politicians are all talk, no action. Millions of people are flowing across our southern border. We've got to build a real wall. With all of this, our country has tremendous potential.
He just said that our shit is crumbling and he wants to build something else. I just want to be clear on like the truth. Like this is the same sentence. And he says these things.
When he says that people are pouring over our borders, he showed like stock, like B-roll footage of like, you know, ostensibly individuals from south of the border coming across the, you know, the border into Texas and Arizona. But it's like literally just like random like B-roll footage of like dudes going over the Rio Grande. And
it's probably a movie.
It probably is. But so, and that's when he says, build a real wall. And like, you're like what? Like barbed wire and like guard fences and shit? Like, what does he mean by build a real wall? I mean, like, he's done this wall thing. Like, he's really on this. Like, he's big on the immigration and Mexico and building this wall as if like it's going to be like a Trump wall and he's going to own the fucking like rights to the wall and it's going to have advertising. He's going to have like suites and shit. I don't know, but he's really pushing this fucking wall.
Let's make America great again.
I've said it since the day he made the sacrifice to hit the campaign trail. Voters crave the anti-status quo politician. They want results. They need a fighter. They need someone to fire all those political correct police. And this is a movement. The trumpeters.
Stop. Okay, there. Just
the trumpeters.
No.
The trumpeters. Come on.
The sacrifice. What sacrifice? He doesn't even have a job. What sacrifice has this man done? That he sacrificed to hit the trail. That's all he does anyways is walk around talking about himself.
Did you hear her using his buzzwords too?
Oh
you
my know, God.
This is a movement.
Everybody think they got a movement now.
I got something for you.
Yes, blah, 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 blah. Thank you.
The entire thing. Just blah, 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 blah. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. And she just was gushing, apparently. That was like the whole interview was just her, you know, just moment after moment, how wonderful he is and how great and all of this stuff, which doesn't make any sense to me at all. But she's not exactly
maybe
the sharpest
tool. Be his running mate.
Mm-hmm. Well, he proclaimed that he would love to involve her in his administration if he was elected president. Quote, I'd love that because she really is somebody who knows what's happening and she's a special person. She's a really special person and I think people know that.
Oh, yeah, she is.
She's special, all
You're
right.
You're using that word special.
I don't think you mean what you think you mean.
What do you mean by that?
Mm-mm.
Special.
Not good. Not good at all. Ugh. I can't.
So, Nick, do you ever date interracially? I guess the phrase is, do you swirl? I hate that.
I hate the swirl.
I hate that.
It's the worst. Ugh.
It's better than the jungle fever.
Oh, yeah, that's really bad.
I like fought against being known as the black chick who only dated white men because it was categorically false. But I have dated a little bit of everything.
Okay. Well, so
equal opportunity dater.
I appreciate that. And Leslie and I both have said, I think we both would agree that we didn't set out to date interracially. We were friends, and then we started dating, and we found love. And you know, it's like, oh, I fell in love with my best friend. She happens to be a black woman. Like, right. So to me, it's like this, like, you know, I want an interracial relationship. You know, how to have one? Like, that's kind of,
it's weird.
It seems fetishizing to me sometimes. But anyway, I don't know how I got on this rabbit hole, but like, you ever go into like a rabbit hole and like boop beep bop bop? I'm on Slate, and I ended up on a Dear Prudence advice column. Okay, and the headline caught me. Prudy counsels a black woman who can't connect with her white boyfriend on matters of race.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, that was. I'd like to see what her advice is.
Oh, the top of it says, help. I'm a black woman whose white boyfriend doesn't understand race at all.
Right.
Why do y'all go together?
Caught my attention. So, so mixed race relationship asks, I'm a black woman for whom culture, race, and politics are very important and sometimes painful subjects. I love my partner of 2 years very much. He is a white man in his late 30s who has very little experience with these matters, and our differing views have caused many arguments. Now we avoid the subject of my culture completely, and it's killing me that he does not understand this important part of who I am. Occasionally, he will make generalizations and comments that I find worrying or insulting. He is not a racist.
Yes, he is.
Merely ignorant. He thinks we are all one as humans and should not pay attention to differences. If the playing field were equal between all people, I would agree with him, but it simply is not. Except for this, he's a sweet and gentle man, intelligent, trustworthy, and blessing in my life. I love him, but I feel I am betraying my politics and community. Mostly, I just want to talk, but I can see why he avoids it with all the shouting that's happened.
Okay, hold on a second. Help. Let's each give our advice to mixed race. Drew, what would your advice be?
Run. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's worth, if he's that insensitive to her culture and they can't even have conversations, and she says he's not a racist but he makes ignorant comments. I know exactly the kind of white guy he is, and he's the kind of white guy that dates a black woman and thinks that gives him instant understanding about blackness and anti-black racism, and that he's above it, and he's, oh, I'm not racist because you know, black woman lets, you know, she touches my penis, so that absolves me of racism. And I'm not going to say that those are like the worst kind of interracial relationships, but I find that I've seen, not that I know, but online on Twitter, a couple like that, and just in the interaction I was like, man, I feel sorry for her. I feel like he's abusive in some way. And she's like Stockholm syndromed it somehow. I don't know. But my advice would be, he's not worth it. You know, I'm sorry you spent 2 years.
Nick, Jew, what would your advice be?
I think any relationship where you have to tuck in a part of who you are, not in the essence of like compromise to try to get along, you know, go along, get along, is very unhealthy. And the only way a relationship like that will work is if she begins to buy in and starts doing this self-hating thing that is very common that I've seen sometimes in interracial relationships. And then she's going to give him a pass, because then he could be that guy who'd be like, oh, I'm not racist, my girlfriend's black. So like, it's, to me, it would be very hard to stay in a loving, healthy relationship with somebody who doesn't understand my culture. So I would say break up.
Yeah, and even to your point about, it doesn't even have to be race or culture. Like, you're talking about theater. What if there's a guy that's like, oh, I fucking hate theater. Don't talk about theater. I don't want to talk about theater. Don't bring fucking theater up anywhere near me. Is that you don't want, like, that's, you're not being authentic. You're not being your whole self.
My boyfriend right now, he's not like the hugest theater fan ever, but he certainly came to my opening night and is very supportive of me. Like, I don't expect you to come to every show, but you should come to a show, and we don't have to sit around for hours and hours and talk about theater. That's why I have a best friend who's also in theater, but you have to support me.
Yeah. Like, go over lines when you need them and shit. Yeah. You know? All right, Leslie, what's your advice?
Run, girl, run. Run quickly. Yes, that was my first thought, was just like, get out of there, because everything that Nick Drew just said is what I was thinking, which is that if you stay in this relationship, you're basically allowing a space to be created for this person to act in completely racist ways, not just in your home, but outside of it. And it's just like, the worst. You know, I don't even know how they can. Well, let's see what Prudence says.
My show notes, I don't know if you saw this, Nikki, were the worst interracial dating advice ever.
Ever.
That's my opinion.
All right.
Dating on pins and needles.
When he expresses his sincere and well-intentioned beliefs.
Wait a second. Who said that they were sincere and well-intentioned?
Oh, Prudence just assumes. Because he's white. When he expresses his... There's nothing in that statement I read before that said sincere and well-intentioned. In fact, I'll read it again. She says, he will occasionally make generalizations and comments I find worrying or insulting. Okay? That's the... sincere and well-intentioned beliefs. You berate him for his naivete and ignorance.
When did she berate him?
Yeah, well, so she did say that some yelling.
Yeah, but shouting. That's not assuming it's her yelling.
True, true.
That's a big assumption to make, but go on.
Yeah, she assumed you berate him for his naivete and ignorance. Maybe that's what's happened to you, Prudence. He certainly has to concede your superior knowledge about being a black person in America. Does that, is the condescension, what's the word I'm looking at? Condescending? Thank you. Is that just like really condescending or am I crazy?
Yeah, very. Go ahead. Finish.
But your attitude seems to be that unless he is a backboard for your views, he's infuriating. You two seem to have arrived at a kind of detente in which you don't talk about this, but then you feel that race and discussions of it are so central to your experience that you can't stand having this be something you don't chew over with your beloved. You asked for my help, so I have two alternatives for you.
Oh, this is going to be good.
Either you decide that this wonderful man, fulfills you in so many ways that you can decide to see him as an oasis from the often troubling issues that you spend so much time on the rest of your life. Or you conclude having a partner who reflects your own views and experience is so central for you that you must let this good man go.
Would she say that to anybody else, like a different religions? I don't think she would say that to somebody.
Yo, that is the worst advice I've ever heard.
And like for real, it's either like, well, you either got to suck it up, bitch, or jump. That's
not just jump. We're telling her to jump. You have to let that good man go. That is completely different than telling her to go.
You're right.
If her options were, okay, let's say the first part is like, you can either decide that you can live with this or this isn't for you and you can leave. But that last part that you must let this good man go, it's like, no.
And even the way she phrased it, or you conclude having a partner who reflects your own views, not that her views are worthy or valid or just or accurate.
Correct.
Yeah, she's almost assuming like, well, you think the world's flat, you dummy. You got to find someone else that thinks like you, you crazy loon. Like, it's so fucking... am I right? Is that the worst advice ever?
It's awful.
Thank you.
Awful. Awful.
I was just like randomly on something. I'm like, oh, black woman.
This woman's paid for this?
I was like reading. I'm like, holy fuck, that's the worst advice ever.
Oh my God.
So yeah, but we all said the same thing. Run, but not
Prudence. Apparently,
gotta let that good man go.
He's too good to let her go.
Oh, nothing in the description made me like lends itself to he was a wonderful, great guy. It just sounds like she's in a relationship and it sucks to break up.
Yeah,
pretty much, and that she's like, yeah, we've been having a good time, but this is a problem, and we end up shouting at each other over it, and he's totally dead wrong in this situation, so how am I supposed to deal with that? Because that's just the reality of this situation, because, you know, being colorblind is not correct, and making generalizations about the race that your significant other is a part of, that does not make you a good person.
Yeah. So the advice column was, I would say, kind of like white normative centering whiteness, and I use that phrase a lot, and you see it a lot, and I hadn't really thought of how pervasive that is in certain things. And I saw an article about photography and how that photography on a very like chemical basis, the absolute like making of a photograph from the process to the chemical, the emulsions to the whatever they do when they expose light to it is optimized for white skin color.
What do you
start
mean?
To finish. So the actual film that they made in the beginning, so color film is coated with many layers of chemicals and they're keyed to different colors and different layers. And the earliest color photos were actually made up of three separate black and white photos, one taken through a red, one through a green color filter, and then one through a blue color filter. That was the chromoscope. But as they've developed the different color film process, that same principle, take an impression, different wavelengths of light. So they would use when you go to the lab, you go to like the Kodachrome lab and you're developing your film, the machine, it's big, you know, chemical process and all this stuff, it gets calibrated to a card of a white woman called a Shirley. It was the Kodak and Polaroid companies would say, you know, here's a true balance reference, normal. So you'd have to like get you're developing a Shirley print, and you know you've got the chemicals and everything just right when she's white and comes out white and looks right and is white. So the balancing of the equipment and the emulsions and everything is like the actual like centering is on a white woman, literally named Shirley.
Whoa.
It's kind of crazy.
That's kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So would, like, school pictures would look, like, really crappy with black people?
Absolutely.
So I remember that being, like, when the darker you were, like, you almost, like, your features would be, like, just non-existent.
Yeah. So the, and even the Shirley woman is wearing a black and white dress on a gray background. So it's, like, meant to, like, balance the sort of colors and everything. And, yeah, I mean, you look at school photos and all the little white kids are nice and properly exposed. And all the black kids look washed out and kind of, like, you know, hard to see, you know. Like, and that would be the, you know, I'm saying, like, the joke. But the comment about only seeing eyes and teeth was because of photos like this. Because that's – you just – that was the white parts would stand out, you know. And even Leslie and I, not that we're, you know, too differently complected. But, you know, if we're focused the camera on one or the other and the lighting, our complexions, one's going to come out better than the other. You kind of have to work on it. And these machines for forever and ever and ever, from the very basic basis, was centered for white people. And there was even a famous filmographer who refused to use Kodak films and cameras and lenses and equipment because it just was so poor for filming black individuals. And a film at the time had Sidney Poitier in The Heat of the Night, and someone had commented like, oh, he's sweating, he looks very hot, and, you know, supposed to be in The Heat of the Night. No, they got fucking lights galore illuminating Sidney Poitier. Oh, wow. so he could be fucking contrasted appropriately with the other white actors.
Whoa.
Isn't that crazy? It just like goes deep, you know, just this focus on whiteness. And it was called a Shirley card. And they probably did this up until, you know, how long were Kodak Labs still in business? Not even that long ago, 5-10 years ago. If you were developing like film, like 35 millimeter film, and you took it to a lab and they developed it, they had a Shirley card.
Wow. That's like in, like if you're working on some electrical work or whatever, you think of a master switch or whatever. Well, the converse of that is still called a slave to this day.
Wow. Interesting.
To this day.
This day.
And even so now they're talking digital photography. So you've got like sensors and chips and algorithms and computer processing that's mimicking this, you know, using pixels, this color process. But it uses the same principles. It will search and look for something that's white, look for, in a low light, look for a white, light-colored, light skin, and then it'll allow the shutter to release and let in the light. You know what I'm saying? Like, it focuses deliberately. The facial recognition, you know, it's much easier for white folks than it is for black folks.
Yeah, wasn't there, like, a guy who did that when that facial recognition came? I think it was for a printer or something, and it was, like, it would never pick up the black person. Oh, yeah, it was PlayStation. Wasn't that what it was?
I think it was like Xbox Live or something.
Yeah, or something like that. And it like refused to like acknowledge black people.
Yeah, there's a professional cameraman that worked on the talk show with Whoopi Goldberg, The View. And he would have different settings. One when he's filming Whoopi and one when he's filming Caucasian guests. Because otherwise it would be unbalanced for Whoopi.
Interesting. I do remember the whole thing with Polaroid in South Africa. And that had to do with photography as well. Because in apartheid South Africa, they had bought or had Polaroid make these special cameras that had a flash boost.
Right.
And black skin absorbs like 42% more light. And the button boosted the flash exactly 42%, so that when they were taking like ID photos, because you know you couldn't be in certain places if you were black, and they were cataloging everybody, that they made this camera specifically to, you know, document correctly the black people of South Africa so they could keep them in their place. An American Polaroid employee discovered it and successfully campaigned for a boycott. It took her 7 years, but yeah.
Really? So an employee discovered that their cameras were being used.
Yeah, they were like, why
is
this being boosted exactly 42%? That's weird. And she was like a technician, and she was like, oh, okay, I see what's going on now. You're not just providing these materials that they purchased, but you're actually aiding them in this horribly racist, system that they've set up. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the in fact, the this is almost sad, but an executive at Kodak said that the company didn't develop a better film for rendering different gradations of brown until economic pressure came from a very different source. Kodak's professional accounts. Two of their biggest clients were chocolate confectioners who were dissatisfied with the film's ability to render the difference between chocolates of different darkness. Mm-hmm. Like Nestle and motherfucking Hershey's were like, yo, Kodak, bruh, your film ain't fucking doing shit for our chocolate.
Wow.
Wow. Fucked up? That's like depressingly sad.
Oh my gosh.
That it's actually like slightly better now, but because, you
because
know.
Because of chocolate.
Confectioners.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was either paying catalogs and high-end fucking print campaigns or spending millions of dollars on shit. And it's like, dude, what the fuck? Our chocolate looks terrible. Mm. It's the film.
I'm just looking at the article that you had about this. A Montre Aza, Missouri, he's an assistant professor of film at Howard University, says that it was never a question of issue of questioning the technology. She remembers being instructed while she was in school, not at Howard, another school, that if you found yourself in the, quote, unfortunate situation of shooting on the, quote, dark continent, and if you're shooting dark-skinned people, then you should rub Vaseline on their skin in order to reflect light. That's what they were told. Yo.
Instead of fucking, like, can you make better equipment and thing for, you know, black folk? Ah, just rub some Vaseline
rub
and
some
put,
Vaseline
a, put a million candle power lights on Sidney Poitier. Make him sweat. No worries. Look good. And then chocolate.
Oh, my gosh. My goodness.
That's to me, that's just like the epitome of centering on whiteness. And like, the fact that there was a card with a white woman named Shirley, and you got the Shirley cards and centered your fucking color stock on the Shirley card. It's like literally centering on whiteness. It blew my mind.
Wow.
Wow. Whiteness never ceases to amaze me. Let me just say that. Like, every time I think, I'm like, I've heard it all. Like, pictures? Wow.
I feel like this next topic's going to whiteness fucking shit up again.
Yeah, I found on the HuffPost Black Voices this cute little article. It said 12 words black people invented and white people killed.
All right, let's hear it.
So I figured we'd go through these and see if we all agree that they have truly been killed. Number one, Bay. Mm. Yeah, Bay's pretty much finished, I think.
Do white people use it?
Yes, and like brands have started to use it too.
Oh, that's definitely death
I
knell.
Saw that
Gap ads has
that
like
Kermit's
Bay.
New boo Denise used it today in an Instagram post. She said, "Bay and I look cute," is what she said.
So. And you know, is it a shortening of babe, or is it like
yes.
babe above everyone else?
No,
or?
It's supposed to. Originally, it was just a shortening of babe.
Okay.
Just like, oh, that's my
kids baby. Made it an acronym yeah. before anyone else.
Yeah, before the kids are like before else. Anyone else. Yeah. Mm. So that's interesting.
And then white people ruined it.
Per usual.
Check.
Mm-hmm. So Trap and Trap Queen is number two on the list.
We fucking ruined Trap Queen. Mm. You know what I think the death knell was that reporter for the. We were on a show, was it Kansas City, where all the players were trying to say 1738 from the beginning of
yes,
Fetty Wap,
yes,
1738, Remy Boys. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what is this? I don't get it. Oh, it's for Trap Queen? I'm all about it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I keep seeing these like fake Trap Queen videos people make. So that's where I think it's been going badly. Get high with my baby.
I just left the mall with my baby, yeah, yeah. And I can ride with my baby. I'll be in the kitchen cooking pies with my baby, yeah, yeah.
It's like a cappella?
Yes.
3-1-7-8-8.
It's four white boys.
I'm like, hey, what's up, hello,
no.
Seen your pretty ass soon
it's
as
dead.
You came in that door, I just want to chill, got a sack for us to roll.
Stop.
Married.
Stop. Stop.
And he definitely sounds better than Fetty.
He does, but I love Fetty Wap, so.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, one of them has cornrows, so I don't know.
Oh, okay.
So he's appropriating all over the place.
He is appropriately the bass, so, you know,
he's,
I don't know.
I'm going to appropriate this music, this song, this hairstyle.
Oh, my goodness.
Go all out.
Hilarious. Number three, Ratchet.
Oh, for sure.
Mm-mm. For sure. Definitely. But I would much rather prefer them to say Ratchet than Ghetto, because I need white people to cease and desist calling things in places that are a little bit not as nice as where they're from, Ghetto.
Yeah. Mm.
Did you watch the MTV show White People?
Oh, yes, I did.
And when the one girl says, oh, that's Ghetto. What does that mean, Ghetto? Why do you say Ghetto? And she's like, I feel like you're attacking me. It's like,
yeah, well, we feel attacked when you call the places we're from ghetto because they're not as nice as where you're from, or when something doesn't work properly.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other, my issue with white people using that word is like, you know, like we made it, like, you know what I'm saying? Like that's not like this. Let's just talk about the actual like urban area that might be, you know, by someone called a ghetto. That's an area that through like redlining and other fucking opportunity hoarding and white supremacist culture has created. And then we devalue it. And then we come in and gentrify it and buy it all up. Like that's a process. So like, don't be calling like, oh, that's ghetto. Like that, I just, no, I'm with you. I second that, Nick. You stop.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I might have to make an Instagram on that. White people, no more use of ghetto. Stop. Mm-hmm. You're done.
Stop it.
That should be a new PSA. Quit. Get on that one. Number four is Squad and hashtag Squad Goals.
Oh, God, yes.
Ruined by that. Taylor Swift, of course, like most things. Yeah. That sucks because I actually love Squad. I love hearing people scream it like at protests and actions and people get together. It's like, it's cool. It's fun. It's nice. And they really mean it. But, yeah, no. When your squad involves Lena Dunham, forget it.
Fuck your squad.
Nope. Not going to happen. Number five, definitely Fleek, unfortunately.
I love on Fleek.
Me too. I still use it and I won't stop. But when Mariska Haverty says, check out these Fleek hairy goods.
Oh, but it's not even right.
It's not even right.
With on. It's on.
They're not Fleek. Even using it correctly.
And it's like turquoise jewelry.
She does selfie. Hashtag necklace on Fleek. Hashtag it's like it's still Fleek week or something.
Oh, no, bae, no.
No. Number six has been around a lot, actually, recently. A lot of, like, who started it, where's it coming from, which is Fuckboy.
Oh, yeah. And then they don't know what it means.
Right.
They tried to define it as something and it wasn't.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's like this myth that it's some sort of trans slur and it's not at all that. That's mm-hmm. never what it was. It was like, you know, these bitch ass dudes out here that don't have their shit together and just, you know, are promiscuous and you shouldn't be with them. Long story short. That's a fuckboy, FYI. And actually, gay black men started it because it was like, oh, these dudes that, you know, those dudes, they're out there. Gotta watch out for them.
Well, yeah. That's like all the straight men appropriating gay slang and then in the next breath say something hella homophobic. Like, you know, shade and all that stuff that y'all think it's cute to say. That's gay dude stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Number seven is twerk, nay nay, and all black dances ever.
Especially and most specifically the nay nay. Like, we know why people, y'all love the nay nay. Just let it go.
Just stop. Oh, God. The Watch Me. I saw the videos with the Watch Me song are just beyond because I saw an Australian octogenarian dance troupe that has a routine to it. And then I saw some like whatever's, oh, what's 90s? What do you mean when you're 90s? I don't know what
Nonagenarian,
whatever those are. They were like sitting in chairs doing the dance as well. That was like their exercise.
That one though, the woman like leading it, like, you know, I'm sure she has a degree in like physical therapy or something, but she's just like, you know, got like a head, like a microphone and a headset, and she's in like a, you know, like a leotard, like a dance outfit, and she's jumping on the stage. Watch me whip, whip, and like there's like Liz, like a bunch of old people like kind of putting their hand up, you know, like they're raising their hand. That's the whip.
Somebody got a nay nay out of their hip.
They are. They're about to just crack it right off.
Yeah, white people done killed twerk, nay nay.
All that.
Black dances. There's also a life cycle to black dances. And it's weird. Like, you know, if it's underground and it doesn't get popular, maybe that person who wrote that music doesn't get paid a lot.
And this is my thing is like people, whoever those people are that make up the black dances, you need to make them like super complicated. White people will never do them.
Yeah, that's right.
The wobble is a perfect example of like a great line dance. Like the average white person, they don't do the wobble.
Because they're
like,
doing it now.
I can't do that one.
You got to. So I'll just say to black folks, I'm not telling you what to do. But as a white person, if you incorporate foot and hand at the same time, I'm out. Can't do it. Can't do it. So if you're trying to get like
but
nine
of those like country line dances that I could never ever do. They were too complex for me.
Yeah, but those are on the ones and threes.
Yes.
So
and I feel like country line dances are slower. Like they're not nearly as fast paced. Like the wobble or you know. Anyway,
some of them are pretty.
Some
fast.
Of them, but they're like. Country, but like square dancing. It's just right. A, you know, there's a pattern and a move and you go, well.
Yeah, that's what I mean by it's like on the ones and threes. We're on the twos and fours and it completely fucks white people up completely. They don't know what they do.
They got the wobble. They're coming for it.
Are they? I've seen some police officers like in New Orleans doing it, but in general, when I've seen it played at parties, like the white people sit down.
They do it out here.
Do they? Oh, Lord. I guess the North Carolina white people got it down by now.
Are white people doing that one left foot one time? Stomp.
The cha-cha slide? Cha-cha, yeah. Yes, they're doing that.
Because yeah. They know how to follow instructions.
They can follow instructions. They can do Simon Says. They're aware of that one. Number eight is yes. And yes, queen.
Oh, God. Yes. Please stop yes. Now.
That one, I remember Ilana on... Broad City said it at the end of last season. I don't know if you watched that show, but she was like, yes, queen. And it was really, it was so funny. But I remember thinking like, no, that's it. This shit is over now. Once it's there. Of course, number nine, bye, Felicia.
Oh, get it out. Go. If you don't know the source material, do not say bye, Felicia.
Yeah. I honestly, it's been done for a while. Bye, Felicia was done like last August.
Yeah,
Keith Olbermann is the one we have to thank for that going mainstream.
Really? ESPN? Keith Olbermann? That guy?
Yeah, he tweeted somebody by Felicia last year, and ever since then, every white person is like, this is the cutest new thing.
They think everything they do is fucking brand new.
I'm sorry, Nick G. We're the worst. I'll apologize for whiteness.
You don't have to apologize terrible. For all
yes,
of
them. Yes, I do. Apologize for them all. I hold you personally responsible.
We're the fucking worst. Because
I'm not claiming nothing these people out here do.
Number 10, Basic.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, I feel like Basic is, for me, I use it to describe whiteness. So I think that it's okay to still use that one. Because I'm like, when I say it, that's what I'm talking about.
That's another one that's from gay people, too, yes, I think.
Totally. Almost all of these are, I feel like.
Well, and I do feel like, I know you use it, Leslie, it's like, this basic bitch over here.
Exactly. And you know exactly what I'm fucking talking about. This basic bitch with her pumpkin spice latte. She needs to move the fuck out of my way right now. Whew. Number 11, turn up.
Yeah, that's dead and gone.
No shade is number 12, of course. And this one got outed this way.
Yes.
Slangtastic for 800, please.
One term for talking trash about someone is throwing this like a big elm tree might do.
Oh, no. Yeah, is shade is not trash talk, though.
On Jeopardy.
Alex, you betrayed us.
No. Alex. Yeah, so that's
Alec. Sorry.
Alec. He's dang. Canadian too, so he's extra bad. Shame on you. So yeah, so all those words have been killed. I have rightfully proclaimed that basic is still allowed to be used, but everything else
we done.
It's done. Done, that done, sucks. Done. Done like a mug. So
I will ruin everything.
Everything. You ruin no. advice columns. You ruin renaming of mountains. You're ruining everything. Just kidding.
Listen, guilty. I love white people. Were it not for my white friends, I would never know the power of a strongly worded letter.
True. I do like to write some letters. I'm going to complain.
Strongly worded letter.
Yes. Today on Facebook has been.
I got something for you.
What do you have?
If I can get this to play. Come on now. How come we'll play? Dang it. It was Alec reading It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp.
Yeah, we don't want to hear him. That is a funny one.
What is It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp? Alec Trebek, come on. Stop.
Yeah, today on Facebook, there's been a plethora of black women that I am friends with complaining about white people invading their personal space and trying to cut in front of them in various places in public, whether it's like in line at the grocery store or at a, you know, shopping mall or saving seats at a graduation or also, I mean, it's been like really like person after person. And I'm telling you, these black women are fed the fuck up.
a thing. I'm not on Facebook anymore, but that is a real life thing. Like, just no spatial awareness, maybe even not caring about other people. Just so many times I've been cut in line in front of, bumped into, ran up on, stood next to very too much, too close for me. Yeah, that's real.
And it's always this, like if you, once you start the confrontation, it's always this, like, oh, were you here? Oh, mm-hmm. I didn't see you. Bitch, what you mean you didn't see me? What kind of fucking shit is that to say to a human being that's standing 10 fucking feet from you? What are you talking about right now?
Yeah. Or just like in a parking lot, they'll just walk. Like, you're just gonna walk. You don't care if cars are coming. Like, you're just going.
Mm-mm-mm. I had a woman the other day in a bakery. Busy ass bakery, walk in, they got a number board, a ticket thing to take. I grab my ticket. This bitch turns around and looks at me and goes, I didn't take a ticket, so I'm in front of you.
Just because you don't have to follow the instructions.
And she said it more like, I didn't take a ticket, but I'm in front of you, right? Like, she's like, right?
No, not wrong. Right. I was like, girl, some other people are coming. You better get your ticket because you're going to be behind quite a few more people than me. You don't hurry up. Oh my goodness.
It reminds me of the, and I have said this movement currently feels different in a lot of ways. And I felt like a year ago that collectively black folk were just like, fuck it when it comes to white feelings. And like, just like, this is like white America. Like, if there was an opportunity to, like, you know, I don't know,
make amends or
something. Yeah, yeah, whatever it is.
It's fucking past.
Way past. Over.
It's funny you say that. I hear you, a lot of times I hear you talking to some of these white people and you'll be like, I don't think y'all realize how pissed off black people really are. Like, you'll say that and I'll be like, they really don't, Drew.
They have no clue. They have no clue. They think like, oh, this is just going to blow over.
Nope.
This whole police brutality, Black Lives Matter thing. Nah, just give it a, they're going to peter out.
What they don't realize is like, there's like, you know, 27-year-old moms that are like, you know what? Fuck this. Like, they don't care. They are over it, and it's like gotten to the point where some people that I know to be, even 2 years ago, were like the calmest, like most, you know, chill people. This shit will just set them off. Like, they just will lose it because it's such an affront. And once you're in tune to it too, you just start noticing how pervasive it is. Just like the photos we were talking about earlier, just, it's just like a layer of bullshit over everything.
Yeah, the white gaze,
it's just horrible.
I've been so very close to, like, what you won't do is.
With the clap, what you won't do is.
If you do, please film it. Just like Vine, you know, like a half a minute. Dude.
Hold on, just tell somebody. Come here, honey. Just hold this phone for me right quick. What you're not going to do.
What you won't do. And starting work emails with, first of all, and then I have to delete and be like, nope.
That's funny. We were in
somebody emailed me today and he was like, I don't understand the point you're trying to make. And I was like, oh, okay. You don't. Well, let me make it abundantly clear.
Oh, you're going to understand,
you
sir.
You understand today. I'll teach you something.
When Leslie and I went to Jamaica as our first vacations together and, you know, beginning of a relationship, there was an omelet station and there's a dude, you know, Jamaican guy, black guy, making omelets. And I'm in line. There's a fucking line. And at the resort, it's one of these like all-inclusive, like eat all you want, drink all you want. And there's, you know, hundreds of people there. It's a big-ass resort. There was a woman who we saw later and discovered later that had been there for like 3 weeks on like out of 5 week stay, recently divorced, was wearing like a huge, like, you know, multi-carat rock, just was like kind of like that kind of white woman. Mm-hmm. And she was British. It was even more like sometimes like the British proper English, like it's like somehow whiter. I don't know. I just is. Anyway, so I'm at this omelet station and she fucking just rolls right up. Big line. I'm next in line. She just rolls right up. I'll have an egg white omelet with green peppers and feta cheese, please. Mm-hmm. And the dude behind the omelet station looks at me with this like pleading, like, please. Please don't make me confront this white lady today, please. And I'm on vacation. I'm like, you know, I give him like, it's okay. I give him like the little head bob, it's okay. And he, you know, gets her gone. Then he's like, you know, he makes my omelet. So to this day, because it's a vacation, it's a relationship, we're kind of getting together, and like couples make these little inside jokes. All I have to do is like someone pulls this kind of move you're talking about where they cut in front of you, do this shit. I'll elbow, and go, pfft. Egg white omelet. look at your girl. She get an egg white omelet.
Gonna get her an egg white omelet over there.
And the white of the egg is called an albumen. Yeah. And I learned this in one of these like word of the day dictionaries. So every once in a while, you're like, albumen. Shut up. Albumen. She getting that egg white.
Yes. And God forbid you say something, and then they turn into like woman in distress. Like.
Oh, yes. It's always like, you don't have to be so rude.
Of
Bitch,
course.
You were rude. What are you talking about here?
This is the whole Miley Nicki Minaj situation in a nutshell. Yep. Miley popped off. Nicki clapped back. Like, you were rude first.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. And in fact, in the Miley one, is even worse because she came back again with all these expletives and still, you know, Nicki's the angry black bitch.
Yeah, and like Miley was in something that wasn't even her business. Nobody was talking to or about her. She stuck her business in where it didn't even belong. And then Nicki was like, bitch, what you talking about me for? I wasn't talking about you.
Right. Me and Taylor squashed it. Why you have things to say? Like that line of that little girl. Like, every time I come around, you don't have nothing to say. But when I leave, you just hear.
Exactly. Exactly. Her face was brilliant, though. I was just happy Nicki did it. You know why? Just because it was good to see. Fuck that bitch. That's what I have to say about that. Miley Cyrus. Oh, gosh. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our... Oh, no. I want to talk about Narcos. I know you didn't watch it yet.
We won't
spoil anything. It's but good. If anybody doesn't know, it's a new Netflix series that is about the taking Medellin. Down of the Medellin drug cartels. And it's told from the perspective of a DEA agent who's a real person. He wrote a book and everything. And so... A lot of the stuff that happens is based on what really did happen, even though I'm sure some of it is fictionalized. But it's really well done. It has a lot of voiceover. People have been complaining about that, but it doesn't bother me.
I don't even notice it. You said people were bitching about the voiceover, and I was like, I didn't even really...
I think it's been fun because he's kind of telling you a little story. So,
like a narration?
Yeah, it's a lot of narration. I would say heavier than most series. It's not something that just happens in the beginning or the end. It's pretty much throughout each episode. But it really works. It kind of sets some scenes, and it also allows you to call back stuff he mentioned earlier. You know what I mean? Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I think they do it. You're right. They do it throughout. But when you said the word scenes, I feel like the show is broken up into like five or six scenes, and each scene starts with a voiceover. Okay, that's not a problem for me.
Yeah.
I have every intention on watching it, but I just opened a show this last weekend, and that just means I haven't had a moment to myself in about 2.5 weeks.
So. Yeah, we never used to be Netflix people, and it was I think Chris from Insanity Tech and maybe Rod talking about was it. Daredevil?
Yeah,
Daredevil. That convinced us to go Netflix. And I'm glad we did it. I've enjoyed a lot of shows. I thought Daredevil was good.
Sense8 was amazing.
Sense8 was good. That was really good. Narcos is good.
Have y'all seen BoJack Horseman?
Yes.
No, wait a minute. We only saw one episode.
I saw more than that. I think it's funny.
Okay. I love it.
That's the one with the guy from...
Will Arnett.
Will Arnett. Yeah. Right.
He plays a talking horse.
Yeah.
Yes. The only thing is there's a lot of bestiality that they just let slide, but you... are just living in that world, so it's okay. But then you think about it, you're like, hold up.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, but now that's not Netflix only. Isn't that on like Adult Swim or something?
That's only Netflix.
I think. It is. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's only on Netflix. I think the first time we watched a bunch of them was on with some friends of ours that had Netflix at the time.
It took me a minute to get into it, especially the first season, but I blew through the seasons in like a weekend.
She snores so loud. She's like an old man. It's like living with a 85-year-old man every night in bed.
I can't believe that was her snoring.
She's so loud. She's so loud. She sleeps deep.
Did you say Nicki sound like a car?
Yes, like a car driving by in the distance.
Oh, my goodness.
My dog.
So
Beatrice.
Tell everyone where they can find What's the Tea and where they can follow you and all that good stuff, Nick Jim.
Sure. Lately, Stitcher has been acting like a hoe, but we are on Stitcher, iTunes, and Podomatic. It's What's the TEA, not the other T, because that's RuPaul's show, and we have this name first. I'm on Twitter at Nick Jew, NICJU. So is Reggie, R2, the number, the edgy. Our podcast Twitter is at Good Day Saints. Same with our email, gooddaysaints@gmail.com. Hashtag DATTEA. And we're on Facebook. What's the Tea Pod?
Nice. No. And so I heard other podcasters griping about Stitcher, and we haven't had any issue. They update from our RSS, but we only do one show a week. What's going on with Stitcher?
I mean, so do we. And then all of a sudden last week they pulled our current episode and reverted back to an old episode, and they are currently a whole ass week behind.
Whoa. Wow.
They still haven't posted our... Oh, they just, I think probably today, posted our latest episode.
Okay. We should look at... have you looked at other things like Podomatic? Or what
I looked at Podomatic, and I think that that'll be the next thing that we go on. But I checked our Stitcher feed. So far, it's been fine, but I don't know if that's going to change.
We use Podomatic to push out to Stitcher and iTunes, but we just have started sharing directly the Podomatic link because Stitcher has been tripping. I know Chris from Insanity Check was having some huge issues with Stitcher, and they were being very non-responsive. When they did respond, they were like, what? I don't know. It's just in the last couple of weeks. It's been really awful.
Crazy. Mm. They need to get it together, Stitcher. Mm-hmm. A lot of these new platforms are giving a lot more bells and whistles than you are, so...
Mm-hmm.
Probably want to get together with that. We will be doing tonight our weekly Fear the Walking Dead recap show. Have you been watching that show?
I have. I actually had seen 3 episodes of the first Walking Dead, and it was too gross for me because I'm kind of a wimp and a baby, and I don't like scary stuff. But I figured this one would start a little slower and ease me into the grossness, so I'm on board for this one.
Excellent. So, yeah, we've been doing recaps every Wednesday evening with
Black Ass Rob.
Black Ass Rob with his trifling ass. Yes, he will be recapping with us, and we will cover the show and also give our award for the most irritating character this week from each of us. And next week, we have the mistress of podcasting herself. Karen will be with us from The Black Guy Who Tips, and Leonard Brothers makes his debut appearance here on the show on the 16th. So we have some really great guests coming up, and thank you so much for coming on the show, Nick, and we really appreciate it. It was so great having you here, and I love West of T, so I hope everybody, if you aren't already,
yes, give it a listen.
Get to it. Get your life. It's really, really funny, and you guys just are just great. And
I reiterate Leslie's comment. I would have thought that you and Art to the Edgy had been friends for a long, long time. It makes sense when you say, like, oh, we were instantly, you know, like, we've known each other forever, because you have a great rapport.
Thank you. We're coming up on our, I believe, 7th year friendiversary in a couple of weeks.
Aww.
Yes, thank you guys so much for having us on. Our schedule is so complex that, like, we get guests like an hour before, like, are you free? So just look out, maybe I'll hit you with the DM, like, so tonight, because that's kind of how it works for us.
We're pretty flexible ourselves, so anytime you just let us know, we'll be there for sure.
Right on. Thank you guys so much.
No, thank you. Have a great one.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, I'm behind on this music all damn day. That's the new thing. I'm not ready yet.
Good night, everybody.
High five.